Blog Talk Radio.
If you have ghosts, you have everything. If you have ghosts, you have everything. You can say anything you want, and you can do anything you want to do if you have ghosts. You have everything. One never does that. One never does that. You can call it surprise, there it is.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Anyway, since with it being Valentine's Day, we are going to just be discussing the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. But before I want to do that, I want to say hello out to Ryan and everybody at 360, and to make sure that we tell everybody that there's going to be a event there this weekend, and it's going to be the Valentine's Day one, the 17th. Cost to get in is going to be $20. They're going to have the Kana sisters there, and they're going to be doing tarot cards, and which is their specialty. So that's going to be really cool and stuff. Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to Tony. I hope everything's going to go okay for him.
And I wanted to say hello to Melvin, and thank you for listening in. We have someone actually special here tonight, since we're going to be doing the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And if I can get him on the line, that would be Matt, who actually lives in Chicago. Matt, are you there? Hold on now, just a second. Matt, are
there
you there?
There we go. Yep.
Yay!
I'm here.
A little bit of technical difficulties. Thank you for joining us tonight.
No, you're definitely welcome.
What's so special about Matt is that he not only lives in Chicago, which was the place where the St. Valentine's Day Massacre occurred, but he also does tours, goes straight through where it took place, and I hear the building is no longer there anymore. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Well, I still run Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers, but I strictly only focus on private residents now. I don't like it. But if, you know, there's certain people sign up for tours and I'm more of a quote unquote special guest. But throughout the years and everything else, like I've prided in doing research and making sure that it's a, you know, legitimate tour to where people aren't getting false information or anything like that. So, I mean, there's a few different aspects, but my voice is a little bit gone. I have a concert coming up, so I've been preparing for it. So,
what kind of concert?
Well, I'm partnering up with a couple different different bands and groups, and I mean it's going to be ridiculous as far as I'd say attendance for whatever kind of genre of music that you're interested in. I'm putting together a concert for country fans, for rock fans, for R&B, for rap, for everything. It's going to be all encompassed into one. So it's only two artists. It's myself and another group that's local. That focuses on like harmonizing and it's in its infancy, if you will, but gonna come to fruition very, very quickly. So
that sounds really freaking cool.
Yeah, it is literally every genre that you can think of except for like EDM, like electric dance music. Under one roof, it's all going to be for charity. And, we got some amazing artists that I I can't release yet because I'm still waiting on certain forms to be signed and all that kind of stuff. So, but that's the fun of what I've been dealing with. But anyway, as far as the tour goes, the one thing I would love to know, and I will sit here very, very quiet, and I want to know what you know as far as research that you've done goes, and then what research that I have done and information on the tours, and I'll see if everything jives or if there's certain corrections that need to be made in certain, like in other thing. I mean, it's your show, you run how you want to, but I'm kind of here just as a all right, well, what you said, all right, here's what actually happened.
Okay. I'm sure there's, so, I mean, I found 1,000 websites on this topic, and, you know, there's different things here, different things there. The main thing that, the main person that it seems to all revolve around was Al Capone. Go ahead.
That's what everything revolves around, especially in Chicago, is Capone.
Oh, okay. Right.
I mean, being Chicago, who's the number one? Being Florida, who's the number one? Being anywhere, who's the number one? It always comes down to Al Capone.
I totally agree with that one. And it started, it says it was in 1929. Hold on one second. I'm getting all confused. I'm sorry. My team partner's here, and we've been kind of doing it together, and he's not feeling up to par tonight, so I'm kind of here by myself. What do you think about it, Eric?
Well, I have a chance to look at this stuff, so I don't know what you're doing.
Never mind. We're going to talk about Al Capone a little bit. We actually went to Pennsylvania, and we got a chance to see his jail cell, and he was quite the man. I mean, it's quite lavish in there. What can you tell us about the man himself?
What about Capone?
Yeah, about Capone.
Well, Al Capone was hands down a people person. He was kind of like the Robin Hood of Chicago, Florida, Pennsylvania. There's a lot of different things that he would do. And if you were on his good side, you were taken care of. My family, who or on my mom's side, who is Italian American, they were had many encounters when he grew up off of Carpenter Street and like Taylor and Carpenter was kind of like the territory. But I mean, there, which is still a really, really good area. It wasn't like they grew up in the slums or anything like that, but my grandpa, he used to make wine in the basement. He used to fix slot machines. He used to do, like, a bunch of different stuff. Capone would frequent that area because that's kind of like little Italy, if you will. There's two different spots in Little Italy and the Italian district that are in two separate sections. And for where my grandpa, my uncle, my parent, or my, not my parents, but my mom, my dad, like he was, I mean, when I say that he was kind of the Robin Hood, yeah, was he doing stuff that was a little bit crooked-nosed? Yeah, he was, obviously. And even up until his death from syphilis, where he died in Miami at his villa, he still had either a hand or a finger or something, which was going on consistently in Chicago. Well, being a resident of Chicago, they don't want to talk about that. I mean, hell, even our last governor, they don't want to talk about that. Everything in Chicago gets swept under the rug so frequently just to seem like it's a phenomenal place to live, and which it is. And when you hear about all the shootings, like I think it was last weekend, there was 6 people killed and like 29 people shot. Well, that's only within a 7-block radius, and it's all the gang war stuff, but it turns it in, it makes us look like we're in a war zone. Well, there's only a certain...
You mean Chicago itself?
I'm sorry?
So you mean Chicago itself?
Yeah.
So
it makes it seem like... It's a horrible place to come, a horrible place to visit, a horrible place to go. Well, yeah, that's true if you're within those 7 blocks. But other than that, I mean, the city's gorgeous. It's safe. There's no issues, really. Unless you go to the south side. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hey, I'm sorry. This is Ryan. I had to come
out.
I couldn't resist. So what's the, I mean, give us some of the background of the, like, what happened leading up to the St. Valentine's Day massacre.
Well, from all the research that I've done, the lead up to St. Valentine's Day massacre is it was two rival Italian gangs. Some of which actually that were killed in the massacre were Irish. And there was kind of a city divided. Within the hierarchies of the mafia at the time, it was kind of the same thing as what you see with gangs nowadays, is there are people who are overstepping boundaries and trying to overcome territory. Well, that's just kind of a no-no. With a lot of the illegal casinos, a lot of the illegal gambling that was going on outside of casinos, just on the streets. Also, in the time of Prohibition, which was right around that time is when it was starting, people were trying to claim a certain territory, and it was just that it was more of a, not like gangs we see today, it was more of a gentleman's agreement, and if you cross that territory, depending on who was working that territory, totally different story. What happened on St. Valentine's Day Massacre was in 1929, we all know that, you know, basically what happened. There were seven people who were killed in a automotive garage, which has now been torn down, was turned into a park, and now the park is closed. And here's kind of an interesting tidbit about that. The location where it is, there is not a single person that I've ever encountered that can walk past that location if they're taking their dog for a walk or anything without the dogs absolutely freaking out. And they bark towards the park. And the owners have to literally, like on a leash, drag them past that area. And once the dogs pass it, they're fine.
Wow.
So, kind of a just little side note, but stuff that I've come across. It's they set it up once the building was torn down, which was a two-bay garage, single level, and it was all brick, and you know, everything came in entrance-wise through, I can't say an alley, but if when the building was standing, it would have been considered an alley. Most of us now, if you go there, would consider it like a cul-de-sac or like a court or courtyard, to where you'd pull in, you'd turn around and pull into this area. There wasn't an access off of the main drag that runs on that street. It was all through a kind of a secluded area, which made the homicide so much easier. In 1929, it's a little bit different. I mean, certain people like Bugsy Moran, which ran or Bugs Moran, depending on how you want to actually word it. Hold on 1 second. All right, so Bugsy Moran or Bugs Moran, however you want to consider him, he was actually very, very ruthless. He was terrible. Like, if you crossed him, even for, you know, taking a sixpence or something like that, like, he was ruthless. Some people just really, honestly, want to off people, and that seemed to be more of his MO than anything else. But yeah, I mean, there was involved in the shooting, there was two shotguns, and the rest were Thompson's. And they basically lined them up on the wall and just open fired.
He's killing all seven of them. Wow. It was five men, two in uniform, and three in civilian clothes. So they actually dressed up like policemen.
Yeah, well, that's it's semi-correct, but it's also not exactly correct. There were four in law enforcement uniforms, which were the ones that went in there initially. And then the rest came in, well, more dapper kind of clothes. Well, for the time, if you will. But yeah, I mean, there's it's trying to think of the easiest way to put this that would put it in perspective. So you had quote unquote Capone, and the reason I say quote unquote is because there's nothing that is definitive that he was the one that ordered the hit and the killing.
Because he was in Florida when it happened, right?
He wasn't in Florida when it happened. He was in, he was still in Chicago when it happened.
Oh, okay.
But it's, I mean, there's, there were three people who profited from this hit, which is one, a gang called the Chicago Outfit. There was the Egan Rats and also the Purple Gang. So those people or those groups were part of Capone's like lackeys, basically. It's unclear exactly who was there from the gang, but, I remember one part of the detail as far as the weapons that were used. There were two Thompson machine guns and two shotguns, and the shotguns that were used were double barrel shotguns, which are not indicative of the weapons that the mafia was using at that time. That was more kind of like a farmer or peasant gun. The other flip side to it, and this is where I've thumbed through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours trying to find anything, but the four people who were, which they say four, but stuff that I found comes out to right around six people that killed the seven people. Four are unidentified. Nobody knows who the hell they were.
Wow. I mean, there had been a lot of gangland hits throughout the years. What made the St. Valentine's Day Massacre? Was that just because it was on Valentine's Day, or was it the setup? What made this particular hit so like pop? I guess, like, give it such a made it so popular, for lack of a better word.
It changed the organized crime division in Chicago and the surrounding areas, like the like outlying areas, suburbs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It changed the whole dynamic of who was running what. So the people that were killed in St. Valentine's Day Massacre were kind of the top dogs, or the dons, if you will, of other gangs that ran certain areas of Chicago. Well, if you take out those people, because it was supposed to be a peaceful meeting that was mm-hmm. organized, and I will confirm this was organized by Capone, and there was more of his lackeys that, like, took care of the, you know, the actual shootings and murders and all that kind of shit. So, but it gave, it opened up four more territories within the Chicagoland area to Capone's confidants and to his minions, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that gave them more access to other areas to where they would have to fight. Because and here's another whole thing I can get into of how the hierarchy of a mafia branch works. Well, once the boss is dead, then you pretty much become owned by somebody else.
Mm. So like a chain of command type of thing.
Yeah. So say, you know, Johnny Johnson kills so and so, then Johnny Johnson is the owner of that territory, depending on how high he is in the ranking.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have somebody who's and it's so funny, and it's not funny at the same time, where if you come to Chicago and you talk about any single place in the city, everybody has an Al Capone story.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, there's no way in hell that guy was that active. To where socially active, to where he was going to all these places and doing all these things, and he had XYZ places and all that stuff that is actually legitimate. It's not. A lot of people nowadays play off of the, oh yeah, Capone was here.
Well, it's like the George Washington slept here type thing, where every place you go, oh, Washington stayed here. Well, he must have stayed a lot of places.
Yeah, like there's no way that he had time in his schedule to be at nine places at once, you know, within like 3 days. There's no way. But one thing that Capone did have that a lot of people don't know about, like, well, they know about his place in Florida, but they also don't know about his place in Michigan. They don't know about his place in Wisconsin. They don't know about his place in Indiana, also South Carolina and Los Angeles. You playing Pong over there?
Yeah, what's that noise?
Probably me. I'm sorry.
So, I mean, personal opinion. Do you think Al Capone was involved in the shooting?
Oh,
for sure. There's honestly no question or doubt about it. And I also believe that part of the shootings were done, well, not part of the shootings, the people that were involved in the shootings, that part of them were actually law enforcement. But they just happened to be on the take. Which is how they got the uniforms, how they got certain things. I'm still trying to piece that together, but everybody who's involved, like Ursula Bielski, Ray Johnson, Clarence Howard, everybody who is really into Chicago history and does the tours around here. Once I brought that up, that actually makes a lot of sense, because Capone did have a lot of law enforcement on his payroll. So, I mean, is it out of the question? No. Is it proven? Not yet. But, and I don't know if it ever will be proven, because that's the one thing when you're dealing with a criminal mastermind, whether it's, him or any other mafia don or boss, stuff doesn't really stay in the files, especially when you're talking about 1929 through the 1960s and early 70s, I believe. When you're going through a Great Depression and somebody is actually putting money into the economy, that kind of stuff, whether it's legal or illegal, if it helped the public and helped everybody else, kind of really gets swept under the rug.
Yeah, I mean, if you're dealing with crooked cops, they're going to make sure that whatever evidence that they have that's out there that may be linking them to the case is going to get, misplaced in quotation marks.
Yeah, and there was an account right around the time, it was February 11th, that there were police. It works differently now. If you're a cop, you bring your uniform home, you wash it, you press it, you do whatever, and then you wake up and you go to work the next day. Well, back then they had laundry services, which they didn't also just laundry your clothing. They were laundering certain amounts of money to where uniforms would show up that would weigh about 12 pounds. And this is all going through the police station, coming into the police station, leaving the police station, and coming back to the police station. But so if you had 12 pounds worth of laundry and it came back and it was only about 3 pounds, guess what you were missing in the laundry?
Yeah.
You're missing the big bag of cash that was packed into the satchel of laundry.
Yeah.
So that's where, and here, here's a turn of phrase as far as like coining. During that time, and I believe that, and I'd have to double check on this, but I believe, if I remember correctly, that the whole term of money laundering came from the Chicago Crime Syndicate. Because the laundry would come in and it would come back, and it'd be the same amount of items that were in there, but they were not allowed to check in what it was.
Just be significantly lighter as far as, like, you know, weight.
Yeah. And here's a really interesting story that, you know, with not really Saint or the massacre, but just an interesting story that ties Capone into, like, the old school old neighborhood of Little Italy in Chicago. So my grandpa, my mom's dad, used to fix and work on slot machines, and he also used to brew his own wine or ferment his own wine, I'm sorry, in the basement of their house. And there'd be drop-offs and pickups. So he'd fix the slot machines, any issues that were wrong with them. But there was a certain night, my grandma told me this story. She goes, yeah, you know, it's I was down in the basement, you know, testing out this slot machine, and all of a sudden there was a couple of bullets that came through the window, and then there was a knock on the door, and it was Capone, and he was saying basically to the tune of, you know what, your house wasn't a target, it, you know, it was just something that happened with somebody else across the street. I'm sorry for the inconvenience. Gave me a couple $100 and they went away. Well, it was also an instance to where a neighbor, his name is Felix, and Felix was kind of like he was a thief, but he was also tied in certain ways. This is honest to God, 100% true. Felix used to, like, rob trucks that used to go to Marshall Fields. Then he'd steal fur coats, he'd steal, you know, whatever. And all of a sudden, like, the cops started showing up at Felix's house. And they'd walk through and they'd walk out and there was nothing going on. Well, my mom and my grandma actually told me the story. My grandpa, too, when he was still alive, it said that, you know, there's this real foul-smelling, like, stench coming from the chimney of Felix's house, which, if you look at the old neighborhood in the Italian district, it's the houses are very, very close together with, like, basically just a breezeway or an alleyway between them. Well, what Felix was doing is he was stealing fur coats from the Marshall Fields trucks by the boxes, and he would bring them in. They started catching on to him, and he was throwing the fur coats into the fireplace in the furnace and burning them. So what they were smelling is the burning hair and all this stuff. But when the authorities would go through Felix's house, they wouldn't find anybody or anything or any merchandise. Well, he had built this whole infrastructure inside the house, which was more like a hiding den.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where he kept all the merchandise, and then when they were catching on to him, he'd burn it in the furnace and in the fireplace. And so he was burning what he couldn't dump off and sell. And also, another tie-in with Capone with that, and the Northsiders, was Felix was stealing for numerous amounts of people, and he owed money to everybody. So the reason he built the safe house wasn't for the authorities, because he had the money to pay him off. It was for when he didn't pay up to who he owed money for or what he put his guarantees out for, that portion of it would just get burned. They'd come, they'd knock on the door, they'd kick it in. They come through with guns. They didn't find him. They found his family. And I said, well, when we see your husband, there's a marker out for him. So that's what my mom, my grandma, my grandpa, that's what they grew up next to. So that's off of, the house is torn down now, but that's off of Carpenter Street. But to get back to subject at hand, what do you want to know specifically, like gritty details, I guess you would say, about the massacre, considering that's what your show's about?
That seems to that, and compared to today's society, going in and killing seven people is not considered a massacre. It's just something that happens. In 1929, it was one of the biggest things that ever happened, and we hear about it today. You know, so it was huge.
Well,
is that because they were mobbed, or?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it, I think more or less it made headlines because of the day that it happened, and the way that it happened, because it was done like completely execution style.
Mm-hmm.
Which, speaking of which, I want to take 1 second and say that my heart and my prayers and just all love goes out to all the families in Florida of the confirmed 17 that were killed in the school shooting today.
Right.
That's absolutely, absolutely horrible.
It's very sad.
And it's, I literally, as I was following the story throughout the day, I'm like, and I started thinking about it, I'm like, what sick son of a bitch can go into a school and shoot, like, over 17 people? I mean, last I heard there were 17 confirmed that have passed on. But, like, how, I mean, go, you know, just, if you're that messed up, just off yourself. Why do you have to go in and, like, you know, kill all these people for absolutely no reason? It's something.
Yeah, there's no,
even with a psychology degree. I mean, I've dealt with serial killers. I've dealt with people who have dismembered people. But, you know, I mean, to walk into a high school and just start randomly blasting, it's like, oh, and well, you know, you go back to Columbine, like. That's when the trend started to go into schools and start shooting them up. Like, I'm sorry to segue away from what we were talking about, but it was just something that's been on my mind all day. And, you know, in a day that's supposed to be filled with love and happiness and caring and all that, like, just off yourself. Don't take anybody else with you. Like, there's There's no reason.
You know, it's kind of hard to get involved in something like this when, you know, this happened in 1929 and this just happened today. You know, it's your mind, you just don't want to, it's just not on the topic at hand and when something so crazy and so horrific happens. You know, so.
Yeah, that's one thing I was looking at, too, is I'm like, all right, well, that, I don't know, I'm like, not that there's any correlation between the two, but, you know, this is going to be probably the modern-day St. Valentine's Day massacre. So, and it's not gang related, it's not, you know, it's not thug related, it's not, you know, anything like that. But also, for where it happened, if anybody is in the area, which did, it's kind of closed off now, but you can kind of see it, but if you ever make your way to Chicago and you want to see the actual location, there's no buildings anymore, there's no nothing. But it's at Dickens and Clark, right on the cross street right there, in Lincoln Park, which Lincoln Park is actually a really, really, really nice area.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're ever in that area and you want to check it out, that's where it's at. But I will tell you, if you do stop and you're looking at it and you're trying to do an EVP session or you're taking photos or any of that stuff, the cops will find you. It's a huge no-no in that area.
Right.
So yeah, CPD is definitely on that area. I actually had to get for any of the tours that, because I don't personally run tours like on my own, but I'm a special guest that will go and host certain parts of tours with Ursula Bielski's company, Chicago Haunting, and we had to get special permission from the city to actually have the bus stop there and talk about that area and what happened.
Now, why is that, do you think? Just because they don't want that part of Chicago history to be, like, glorified?
It's not looked at as glorified, considering that Chicago wants to be a, like, such a progressive city. It's just they don't want that scar, that tarnish on the reputation of the city. I mean, don't mind the fact that, you know, there's people within a 8-block radius that are constantly killing themselves. Like today on MSN, there were 27 people shot and 6 dead on the south side. So there were 6 homicides and 23 people shot on Valentine's Day. So not that Chicago's a dangerous place. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's just certain places in Chicago you don't go. And it's just constantly warfare.
Still divided, and back in 1929, they were saying that it was divided in the north side and the south side, and that's, you know, where all this came from is they were against each other. Is it still that way now, today?
Well, it's not really segregated or divided the way that it used to be. I mean, yeah, you still have your, like, basically every nation, every color, every creed has their own neighborhood, whether it's, you know, Chinatown, the Japanese aspect, like a little Tokyo. You have little Italy. I mean, it's across the board, but there's a large section of the city that is still very, very culturally diverse and very accepting. So it's, you know, but once we start getting into the gang territories and all that, which, I mean, Ryan, you know, like Richmond has the same thing.
Yeah, well, you know, all cities have the same. They have good parts and bad parts, but the bad parts are what get their attention.
Yeah, nobody focuses on the positive things that are going on, because that doesn't make for good news.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a very interesting show if we talked about, you know, it wouldn't, you know, if that's what people want to hear about, the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm. And around here, like, the news anchors and news teams, like, you won't, even though it was, all right, so 1929 up until now, I mean, you're talking, you know, over, or what, almost 80 years?
Mm-hmm.
Next year will be the 80-year anniversary of it. They don't bring it up as, oh, well, it's the 79th year of the massacre. It's, you know, all about Fannie Mae and, you know, chocolates and where to go and eat and have some drinks and have some fun. And, like, that's what it is. But nobody reflects back on 79 years ago and the fact that they tore the buildings down. They tore the whole basic concept and ideas and actual information. It's really, really hard to look up online. I mean, it truly is. So, I mean, what do you have? You have basically a Wikipedia thing to where, I mean, Wikipedia is just somebody adding information to the current story that's going on. I mean, that's pretty much what Wikipedia is. There really isn't a factual backup unless somebody cites something on there.
Well, we got a minute left, guys.
Yeah, it's been nice having you on, Matt, and thank you, Ryan, for coming on. And
no problem.
I know that we could talk days on this subject.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, well,
I'll talk to you. Thank you, Matt, for coming on. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Right. Well, thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Wendy. Happy Valentine's Day on a positive note.
You
happy
too.
Valentine's Day.
All right.
Good night.